Sorry about that. I've called the meeting to order. Our agenda will be a little different tonight to accommodate our guests. First, we're going to have the public comment period as normal, but then we are going to have our speakers for the evening because we have they have a tight timeframe and Mark trying to catch and want to accommodate that and then proceed with the rest of the agenda. So I'm assuming there are no objections to the agenda. I will consider it approved. Okay, public comment period. We have someone signed up, I assume? Both of them. Okay, two people. Good for you. Okay. Jeff.
Well, again, I wish that I could, we didn't have to keep coming and talking to you about the same issue of the blue line, but the planning committee came before this committee back in April and made two promises regarding the blue line. They said that WMATA would begin running all eight-car trains on the blue line during rush hour, and they said they returned to this committee in June with recommendations to increase the service levels. I just want to start by emphasizing that neither of these things have occurred. I've been told that a plan is supposed to be coming in July, so I'll be waiting and hoping that that does occur. But we still have not yet seen the all eight-car trains during rush hour that the planning department said would be occurring when they came here 2 months ago. But while action has been delayed, there has been new crowding data released. And once again, the blue line is by far the most crowded line in the system. In fact, the gap is so large that even if every car on the blue line was eight cars, it would still be the most crowded line in the system, even if every car was to eight cars long. But just importantly, despite WMATA's claim that 12-minute headways are necessary to prevent overcrowding on the silver line, that line's consistently fallen below even the minimum guidelines for crowding. While blue line riders are cramming onto cars like sardines, the average silver line train during afternoon rush hour, according to the latest data release, has just seven people standing per car. Just an average of seven, while blue line riders are barely able to fit onto their trains. Back at a meeting in the fall with Lynn Bowersox and other WMATA leadership, we were told to wait for the data. We have waited, and it's spoken extremely clearly and consistently. The claims that overcrowding will occur on the silver line unless the blue line has just five trains per hour is undeniably false. So I implore this committee to keep pressuring WMATA to restore service to Blue Line and either better justify their allocation decisions or restore service to the line. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Hello, I'm Laura Larimore, and a co-creator of the Save the Blue Line campaign for Blue Line riders and restoring service to Blue Line riders. In previous months, we've come to this committee showing that 12-minute waits for blue lines is not only twice of any other line in the system, but it's also the longest in the entire country. This is when the trains are running on time. The latest vital signs found that over 15% of blue line trains are coming more than 14 minutes apart during rush hour, and this means that between once and twice a week, a daily commuter can expect 14 minutes or more between trains on the blue line. So recognizing that WMATA has to balance competing priorities, how long is too long to wait for a train? We were really interested in this, so we commissioned a survey of residents in DC, asking them what is the longest that riders should have to wait for a DC Metro train during rush hour. The survey was conducted earlier this month, and the average answer was 7 minutes. 86% of people said the maximum wait time should be 10 minutes or less. Clearly, this indicates there's a disconnect between the service that WMATA is providing and the service that residents of the DC area think is acceptable. And we think it's really important that people take public transportation, but it also needs to be a viable option that people are interested in taking. 12 minutes between trains is longer than riders view as acceptable, and it's longer than almost any other subway system in the country. So in the past 10 months, not yet has WMATA provided a justification for these service cuts that stands up to scrutiny with the data that they themselves are providing. Thank you.
Thank you both. As the one, I might be the only one that takes the blue, but as Alexandrian, where blue is king there, I understand your frustration, and we are also working to try to get an answer from WMATA on what will happen when. Thank you. Something I should have mentioned about the agenda. One of the things I want to do tonight, because we do have two new members, we are going to do kind of the roll call that we've done before, where they get to introduce themselves and we each can introduce each other. So, but we will do that after the presentation has been completed and when we can send them on their way, because I don't want to rush us through that part. So we now have two. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for our presentation tonight.
Is the light on?
The light's on now. Okay, can you hear me? Great. Okay. My name is Jim Bongiorno. I'm a project manager out of the Treasury Department, and I'm here tonight to talk about the paper fare card elimination project. I'll be referencing your second to last page on your handout. The goal of this project is to eliminate the use of paper fare cards in the rail system. So we will be going Smart Trip Card 100%. That's the objective. And to accomplish that, we are going to retrofit the blue passes and fare cards machines that you all know and love to vend Smart Trip cards instead of paper fare cards. So the machines will work just like they do today. Except that you now have a Smart Trip card, you'll be able to add any value you'd like to that Smart Trip card within up to $300. You'll be able to add rail passes to that card just like you can. Well, actually, you can't do that to a paper fare card, but you will be able to do that to a Smart Trip card. And we will charge you $2 if you're buying a new Smart Trip card. If you're simply adding value or a pass to your existing Smart Trip card, that'll work just like it does today. So essentially, that's what we're doing. We will be pulling the paper fare cards out of the brown machines, the cash-only machines. So those will only be able to, you'll be able to use those to add value to your Smart Trip cards, either with cash or by trading in an existing paper fare card or metro check to add value to your Smart Trip card. That is the other thing that you will not be able to do any longer to the blue machines because we are pulling out the transport mechanism that would allow you to do that, to put in the transport mechanism that will then the Smart Trip cards. We are going to start testing this retrofitted equipment in our lab this summer. By late August, early September, we will do pilots where we'll retrofit one blue machine at King Street, at Union Station, and at Reagan National to put it to the test. If it looks good, we'll start the rollout in October, retrofitting. And so basically, we'll go mezzanine by mezzanine, where we will retrofit the blue machines, take the paper fare cards out of the brown machines, and then that particular mezzanine will be Smart Trip card only. Until we wrap it up towards the end of January 2016. So essentially the goal is to eliminate all paper fare card sales by the end of January 2016. Then we'll have a transition month, February 2016, where anyone else who has paper fare cards can still continue to use them to enter the system. But come March 5th of 2016, we will block the bezels on the fare gates, and we will no longer be accepting paper fare cards at the fare gates. Riders will still have an opportunity to trade in their paper fare cards to add value to a Smart Trip card at the brown machines or at our sales offices through June 30th of 2016. Come July 1st of 2016, if you still have a Metro check or a Metro paper fare card, congratulations, you have a souvenir. That's where we're going to be at. So by then, that will be the very, so June 30th will be the very last opportunity to add value to your Smart Trip card using either a Metro check or a paper fare card. Throughout this whole process, of course, We will be doing public outreach, which is why I'm here tonight. We will be advertising that this change is coming. We think it's going to work out well for the system, work out well for our visitors. It'll make things easier in terms of, for essentially we'll be eliminating the $1 paper fare card surcharge that we have now per trip, which is confusing to visitors, makes extra work for our station managers. By eliminating that, we hope that we'll have better throughput, especially during the summer months and cherry blossom when the visitors are here. They will be able to, the visitors will also have advantages in that they'll be able to get passes, too. I've had many visitors come to me and ask if they could get a short trip pass, for example, because they want to tour the downtown D.C. area. And yes, you can get that if you order in advance from WMATA.com, but no, you can't get that in a station right now. But that will change as we introduce this, the smart trip only process. The smart trip card dispensers that we currently have in the stations, the kiosks with the monitors, they will continue to remain there because we want the extra capacity, especially during peaks like cherry blossom, like 4th of July. We want that extra capacity. So that will be there as an option. Essentially, that's the big picture. I mean, that's essentially what we'll be doing. And I'm here tonight to answer any questions you might have about that process. And I'll open it up for questions. And then I have some things I'd like you to consider. But I'll let you ask questions first.
That's very bold of you to do that way. So you're going to tell us later what you're looking for specifically from us, or
sure.
Is it just really the questions? Okay.
Well, that both.
Yeah, okay. I happen to live in a – I'm going to go first because I've been waiting months since I heard you were coming. I live in a homeowners community in Alexandria where they have a mandated transportation plan where so much of the HOA fees goes toward funding transportation. And because we're not big enough to have a shuttle or something, they resell paper fare cards to us for a discount because they came out of our homeowner dues. What will be our option for them just to give us those discounts in the future? Is there some option that will replace that?
I'm sorry, you get a discount, or do you just get a paper fare card?
We get a discounted purchase of a fare card. We get a $20 card for less than $20.
Is that a that's
and
a,
that's an that's an approved
okay.
Yeah, it's to use the in, what they're doing is using the mandated. We don't have enough ways to even spend the money that we have to set aside and can only be used for transportation. So they sell the cards. They're in essence rebating us for our dues by letting us subsidizing our metro rides, just as the government subsidizes that the homeowner subsidizes. I don't think it's anything that's under the table kind of thing.
Oh, no, no, no,
it's
no.
Totally.
I'm just puzzled because, to my knowledge, I'm only aware of one product that we offer that the outside of, say, student passes or a senior citizen reduced fare type products.
And we pay the full fare. It's just that the card that we used, we didn't pay the full price for the paper fare card. So what I do is I give her, you know, money for the cards, and then I take the paper fare cards and add them to my smart trip. We can talk about that. If that's
okay.
Something that requires
okay.
Things, I don't want to take the whole time here. I'll get that
sure,
on the table because
sure.
I don't believe we're the only homeowner that does that.
Let me say something, I guess, broadly about it. I'll consider this, for example, a community-based organization. That
yeah.
is, and we have a lot of social service organizations that are using paper fare cards with their clients to help them get
right.
to appointments and so forth. And we have looked at that. We have two options we can offer. One is we can set up a what's referred to as a compact point of sale device at a location. This would be the same devices that CVS and Giant use to let patrons add value to their smart trip cards. So if there are sufficient sales for a community-based organization, we could use that as a vehicle to add value to your Smart Trip card. So that's one method. Another method is we can leverage our Smart Benefits program, which is essentially set up for employers to add value to their employees' Smart Trip cards. But there is nothing that would prohibit us from letting a community-based organization do the same thing for their clients. And that would be a better fit for an organization that has very low sales each month. Pardon?
It is low sales.
Low sales, yeah. So there are those options to accommodate that. And then in a worst-case scenario, if I'm providing a fare for a client, if I'm doing that today and I'm using a paper fare card to do that, you're paying a $1 per trip surcharge is being added onto that. Those are the current rules. So in other words, for a round trip on paper, that costs you an extra $2 over and above the fare. That's the way that works in our system now. So if a CBO or a community-based organization is providing a round trip fare for a client, then worst case scenario, if I give you a Smart Trip card and I will not have to charge you $2 for that Smart Trip card, you're in a break-even situation. Worst case.
No, I don't know that anybody uses the fare cards to get through the gates. They use them to add to their Smart Trip cards, so they get full value.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so they do that. Yes, right. Okay, I understand what you're saying. So in that instance, the Smart Benefits approach or the compact point of sale approach would be the better options.
Thank you. And so as I mentioned, if you do want to speak, go ahead and put your sign up, and we're going to go around the room. I will start this way because Fred was first, so he gets to go first, and then we don't have unlimited time, if we can keep it to a question each.
Okay, so I have one question, and I've been holding it for 2 years. So I think this is a great idea, but here is a problem that exists with the Smart Trip cards. So I have at home 3 or 4 Smart Trip cards, because sometimes people come to visit me, and I say, here's a Smart Trip card, go ride the Metro. So what Metro does is, if you don't use your Smart Trip card in a certain number of days, they turn off your card and you can't get the money back without spending about 2 hours on the phone with customer service. And usually you have to call many different times because only a small number of the people on customer service know how to fix this problem. So it seems to me when you're going to put out more of these Smart Trip cards, there's going to be more people like me who have spare Smart Trip cards with $10, $15, $20 on them. And they're going to go use them and discover that you've frozen them. Have you guys thought about this?
To be honest, I'm not aware that we do that.
I guarantee you do that.
I hear you, and I want to. I will follow up tomorrow with our customer service manager on this, because this is something I'm not aware of. I do know, for example, that if you've set up, if you've gone to WMATA.com and you've ordered a pass, and you don't tap your card to one of our targets within 30 days, I know there's an expiration, and you then have to call customer service to get the pass. But I'm not aware that we turn off. The only times we turn off a card typically is if it's hotlisted because it's reported as lost.
So if you go 30 days, even if you've been using it regularly, you turn it off.
I will follow up on that. If that is happening, I'm not aware that it's happening. But and from what I understand, it should not happen. But I will definitely follow up on that. Are those cards registered or unregistered?
So that's also the part of the trick. So you have the unregistered card. Yeah, so we don't have every card registered. And it's this very long involved process to get get your money back.
Okay, so it's happening with both registered.
Well, I don't know. I can't say for sure whether it's both, but I do know that one of the reasons I'm here is because my wife sent me to get on the rack and ask that question.
I understand that feeling. I will say this. I know that the cards have expiration dates, but they are years and years into the future. So that, in theory, shouldn't be happening where the card is expiring, in effect. What is actually happening in the end is that the whatever value you add to your account or your card is literally on the chip on the card. That's why I'm a little surprised, because unless that card got hotlisted, then what's happening is when you tap it to the target, it's reading the amount on the card. It's not reading what's on the back end computer system. It's literally reading and adding a transaction to your card, whether it's a sales transaction or a use transaction at one of the gates or fare boxes. So that's why I'm a little surprised, but I will follow up and I will get back to you tomorrow.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And it's Mr. Walker?
Yeah.
Is that, okay, this morning.
If you can also get to James. James will then, he can save you that.
James, so I follow the protocol.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the protocol helps you.
Yes, yes.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't know where my sign is. I'm sorry. A question regarding disabled and seniors.
Yes.
You've got the smart cards that have the special fares on them.
Yes.
One scenario I can think of. You're disabled, you're a visitor, you can't go up to one of these machines and select that kind of card. How do you deal with a situation like that?
That's described on our website. Because you have to present documentation to validate your disability or your seniority, we don't sell those from vending machines. There's a separate process for that. There's also a process for visitors, if they want to avail themselves of that, where they can, if they follow the process before they arrive, there's an opportunity for them to enjoy a reduced fare. But we would not dispense them from a self-service ticket vending machine.
Probably a good business reason why not. You'd be surprised right. How many disabled old people you'd get, you know, coming in. Yeah. Okay, thank you for
You're
that.
You're welcome.
Hi. Has the question come up, or have you addressed the minimum purchase yet? That's one concern that I have, and I know it's a real hardship for a lot of people that right now, if you want to use a credit card to load money onto your Smart Trip card, it's a minimum purchase of $20. And I know that there's been talk to, like, switching over to fare cards and having these vending machines, that there's going to be minimum purchase requirements, whether it's cash or credit card. Has that been addressed?
In today's world, $20 is not the. We're talking about the ticket vending machine, correct? At the ticket vending machine, not at online, but at the ticket vending machine.
No, I was just wondering, are these going to operate like the vending machines that are in the stations now? The stations now require a minimum.
There is a minimum, but it's not $20. It's like $2 and change. It's not a $20 minimum. You can use the white buttons on the machine under the display to lower the amounts. As a matter of fact, in order to reduce the amount of time people have to spend in front of the machines, we're going to set the starting point to $10 because we realized that there weren't that many people that were throwing $20. So now you're waiting for somebody to, especially if they're a visitor and they're like, how does this work? We figured if we went for $10, it would go faster, the lines would move faster, and that would be a benefit to all.
Well, actually, right now, if you go into a train station, and you tap your card and you want to use a credit card, it's a $20 minimum. It is. And that's a real concern. A lot of people who have the fare cards mm-hmm. are people who, a lot of them don't, you know, they have to use a $5 bill and that's all the money they have to get there and back for that trip. And so I'm just concerned that people who can't afford to put more than $3 or $4 on the card are not going to be able to use it.
I hate to disagree with you, but if I were to take you right now down to Judiciary Square, I would show you that it starts at $20. When you tap your card, yes, $20 comes up on the display, but you can use the white buttons to lower that amount.
Is that a change that you can use
that? I'm not. I've been with WMATA. It'll be 3 years in January. So I'm not aware that was ever the minimum amount. So you can lower that down to $2 and change.
Hi, Sherry, but the question I have with that too, also with the minimum, there used to be a discount associated with it when you did put in the $20 as a minimum, but that went away. But as far as his constituents over the Anacostia side and all, that was something that was very helpful. So don't know how likely that is to come back, but she brought that question to my memory. But the other thing was, as far as the registration of cards and doing the WMATA online, the expiration, I think, is within the, also happens within the 45 days or something if you've downloaded it to the said card.
30 days, yes.
Or 30 days, okay. Yes. So with that, if it didn't always allow a transfer, I found for me. And so sometimes you actually end up losing that $30 either way, because it's supposed to go to the chip of whatever your registered card is as a registered person. So I don't know if that was something he was running into, but I ran into that also. So I just kind of stopped doing it that way because I couldn't lose the $30 each time. So okay. I don't know if it fixed, but I have run into that said issue with a registered card, because even once you've downloaded it, I didn't notice, but as I went back on the site for the final time, it was a small thing that says you need to tap it on some type of, what do you call them, device? Yeah, yeah. Your point of sale targets, so that it's final.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so with that, but that's how some, within that, like I said, 30, your money is gone, but that becomes how, because it doesn't also maybe, if it could have given you a text notice, or if it could also email you that fact, or also, so there's a lot of, you know, $30 or whatever the transaction is that you are doing online that happens with the loss of the money via registered cards as well. But it did definitely do it with the unregistered ones.
I can.
I think that's the loophole.
I do know a little bit about that. A few points on that. One is if. Well, first is always register your Smart Trip card, because customer service really can't help you unless, for security reasons, unless your card is registered. So that's the first tip. Second, if you're using WMATA.com to do an auto load, so you say $30 in this case, as we described, the $30 can be in your back-end account, but it doesn't get to your card, and it must get to your card unless you tap the target. If you don't do that within 30 days and your card is registered, you can call customer service and they can extend the expiration date of that transaction. That shouldn't be a problem. It happens to people on a regular basis. It's something that our customer service folks are used to.
So beyond the 30 days, you can call them and
say, customer service and say, hey, I didn't tap my card within 30 days.
Okay.
And if you don't lose the money, you can, they will restore it. It's just that it's there to protect you, basically, from as a fraud prevention measure. So that's a, but if you identify yourself, you have your security passphrase and so forth, with they will be more than happy to help you on that. Now, we did also have an issue with folks who went to WMATA.com and either bought a pass or added value and then got to the train station and then it didn't load on their cards, okay? And the website indicates that it can take up to 3 hours. So if you do it at 7 in the morning and then show up at a rail station at 8, it might not be there. It's because we're dealing with, well, we're using technology that was developed in the late 90s, early 2000s, and there are certain limitations, which is why there's another project to move us to a new fare collection system in part, to modernize our technology. But and the targets that we have can only store X amount of transactions. There's only so much memory on those targets. So we came up with an algorithm to that based on, if you're registered, based on your usage of the card, we pretty much know, and not that we track you individually, but we know that card is commuting between station A and station B on a fairly regular basis. So because we have limited memory, we send those transactions to the targets at those stations. If we've seen you within the last 21 days. If we haven't seen you, or if you're a visitor, you're brand new, we don't know, then we send your transaction to all the targets, to the extent that we have sufficient memory in the targets to do so. We implemented that change, it was about over a year ago, and that solved this, because this was a key complaint, and from not only from the riders, but also from the station managers, who then had to spend extra time trying to help those customers. And we haven't had any negative feedback since. It has worked very well since then. So we think we're in pretty good shape as far as that goes.
Hey, good evening. Hey. What is the status as far as the alternate electronic payment options, such as the an app or the using your cell phone to pay? So, yeah, sorry. So the status of the alternate electronic payment methods, such as your smartphone or even another way to pay besides using a smart trip card to kind of offset those that use paper cards, like tourists, for example.
Right. Well, we'll still move forward with this aspect of the project where we'll be eliminating the paper, but that's actually a step towards the new system, because if you've seen I don't know if you're aware of the Metro Payment Pilot. Okay, and so that's the new system. And if you go over to Gallery Place, you'll see one of the new gates, and you'll notice there isn't a slot for you to put a paper fare card in. So by doing this project now, it's actually helping set the stage for the new system. That new system will accept contactless debit and credit cards for payment in lieu of a smart trip card. Also, it will accept phones that are NFC capable. So if you're using, I would anticipate, this isn't quite all the way there yet, but I would anticipate that if you're using something like Google Wallet or eventually Apple Pay, by the time we roll that system out, it wouldn't surprise me if it would accept both of those products, but I can't promise that's the case. That's the system was designed to take Soft Card, which is kind of similar to Google Wallet. But then Google bought that company and closed the company down. So the contractor rather has to adapt their technology now to Google Wallet or Apple Pay. So that's now that project. The published date in terms of when that we'd go beyond the pilot, because the network, essentially the pilot is coming to an end and we're in the process of evaluating the results, because it was more of a, it's called a pilot, but in effect it's more of a proof of concept. There's supposed to be a go, no-go decision, and that will be, I believe, coming to the board, the July board meeting. They'll be discussing that. If Mumata decides to go ahead, then the idea was to start retrofitting the buses and stations to have it where all the buses would have the new technology on it, and at least one fare gate in every station would be ready to go by, call it summer of 2017. But the rollout will take a while, because we're spending quite a bit of time actually looking at the transition planning from the next, or the current system we have for fare collection is called NextFare. The new system is NEP, and trying to make sure that there's a smooth transition so we don't have bottlenecks in the rail stations and so forth is very challenging given the limited amount of space in our mezzanines and the large number of people that need to get through that space. So it's going to take a little bit, but we'll get there.
Pablo.
Thank you. Two quick questions. Are we adding, or more machines will be added in the pilot stations? Mainly, I think it's Regan and Union. Are more vending machines added to those stations during the pilot?
No, we won't be adding more machines. We'll just be retrofitting what's there.
Okay, considering that, people will need more time to get used to them, there will be a change just to considering queues. And the other one is related to visitors. I think DC gets about 20 million a year.
Right.
I'm sure that's quite a few million. Not everybody gets one. Some people get it from Fred, but I'm sure some millions of cards will be sold. Are there any plans to recapture cards at possible egress points like Regan, Union, or Dulles?
No, there are no plans to recapture cards.
Would you like to see something like that, recycle those or even donate them?
The cards themselves are not recyclable because of the electronic components that are embedded in them. So that's, yeah, I mean, that is what
cannot be resaled, I mean, recycled, reused, the correct term.
And I understand what you mean. That poses interesting challenges, especially if you, say, registered your car. We'd have to basically, their cars would have to be wiped clean literally, physically, and then wiped clean electronically. And by the time you do all of that and the labor involved and recycle them through, it would cost more than the we pay for the cards to begin with. But I appreciate the concept. And we have discussed it. It's cost prohibitive.
Great, thank you.
Sure.
One question and one comment. What kind of training are you preparing for the station managers in this transition? What type of training are you going to be giving the station managers in this transition?
Lots of training. One of my colleagues, Clint Leslie, who heads up customer service, and I train new station managers on the Smart Trip program. When I first arrived here about less than 3 years ago, realized that they were not getting training. We put a program together where they were getting training, but they were not getting real world training. So we put a program together, and we actually do step them through what the typical types of customer service issues they'll run into with the Smart Trip card and how best to address them. And in fact, we also prepared, it's actually been in the stations for several months now, a take one brochure that the station manager can hand to a customer to address in both English and Spanish, the most common types of issues that they might encounter using a Smart Trip card and how to solve them. So we will be actively training the station managers. But the beauty of this is that because essentially the machines are going to work just like they do today, the amount of training will not have to be dramatic. It can be pretty straightforward.
I just want to comment on what Deborah said before. I shared her impression that when you wanted to add more money, it was a minimum of $20. Did that today. And I know that it says something you can go up and down.
Yes.
But it's probably just me. I assumed if I, was going up, I wanted to put 40 on, and I went up and I went up. I went one further. I went up to 50. I could go down to 40. I never thought that I could go from 20 down to 1.
You absolutely, you may not be able to go down to 1, but you can go lower than 20.
How far down can you go?
My recollection is that if it's a credit card transaction, you can go as low as $1.55 on a credit card transaction. I don't think you can go that low on a cash transaction. If there are two big white toggle buttons below the display, the left one's dollars, the right one's cents, and you hit the bottom portion of that, and that will reduce the amount. Guaranteed.
Yeah, I'm thinking about tourists and people who are used to purchasing their cards as they need them.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to overcharge tourists,
right,
who think, oh, I have to buy at least $20. And you don't want to discourage people who buy the cards as they need them from using the system because they think they can't afford $20.
And to your point, we will be changing that $20 display is going to drop to $10 when we roll out the retrofit.
I understand.
Okay.
I'm just not sure that's clear enough. Since two of us thought it had to be $20, you go from 30 back down to 20.
Okay.
That you don't want to lose any passengers.
Yes,
who are going to start saying, well, I buy it at $2 a time or $3 a time. I'm going to stop using Metro because I just don't have $20 to put into the system.
So if I've had two people now tell me about this, that clearly indicates that our signage is inadequate. We'll see if we can make that clearer, that's just a starting point and you can go up or down.
But I should say it's very conceivable that certainly in my case I'm just thick. I mean, you may have just discovered two people out of a huge, huge population of riders, who are or thick, or one.
Come on.
Well, you know, but it's a good point, and we can certainly check with focus groups. We have our, you know, market survey capabilities, and this is certainly, you know, as part of our public outreach, this is exactly the kind of feedback we need. You're a real rider on the system. If you're a regular rider on the system and we're unaware that you could do that, then obviously imagine what a visitor is going to is contending with.
And for me, it's not a problem because I run out of money on my smart trip card, and I ride Metro a lot. I don't want to add $2. I want to add $50. Mm-hmm. So it's not a problem. But I'm thinking Metro should be doing everything it can not to discourage.
Agreed.
Anybody who wants to use a system who
Absolutely.
Can pay at least for one trip.
Sure, sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Will, I thought you weren't here tonight. He was not feeling well, so we have to be nice to Will.
No, I'm feeling quite well. There's other reasons for my tardiness. Anyway, traffic. I couldn't take Metro today. I had to drive. Will White from Prince George's County. All right. Two quick comments and a question, and the comments are towards my colleagues. Fred, I just checked. I have three cards on the WMATA website, and they are registered cards with fares that only one is regularly used, even though there are small amounts on there, $1.30 and $3.90. Yes, I might be upset if I lose that, but they've been sitting there for many, many months. So maybe what the situation is, if the cards aren't registered, maybe that's why there's a problem. Fred, use your microphone.
To keep the money. I mean, yeah, I get the point, but like, you know, guests at my house, guests come. My wife keeps a pile of these things and hands them out like candy.
No, I'm sure that when we get to the bottom of this, we'll find that it's something else that's happening, because I'm not aware of any reason why that card would not work unless for some reason it was hotlisted. And in theory, if you didn't call in to do that, then that shouldn't happen. But I will definitely follow up with customer service, absolutely.
All right. Second comment, and Bob, I am not thick, but I had that same scenario with the toggle switches for several years until I finally realized, like, when I only had a few dollars available to put on the card, I don't have $50 at a pop to drop on the fare card. So if I only had $10 at that moment, then I realized that, oh, wait a minute, this is a toggle switch, and I toggled it down. So eventually I figured it out, but they're right. It could be signage, and anybody could, like, not want to use it because they're like, well, $20, I don't want to give $20 to the system, and I'm just a tourist. Anyway, so now to my question. You talked about the fare cards, and I don't know if you really addressed the bus situation as well, because we're dispensing with the fare cards. A lot of people don't have smart trip cards, and they pay, because I see them each and every day on the bus with adding cash, and I know that people that have cash, they're paying more. Is there a plan for them, or that is going to be continued after we go into the new system?
Cash will continue to be accepted at the fare box, because the paper fare cards are only addressing the rail side. They're only used on the rail side. So the existing system will continue to take cash at the fare box, and the new system, the NEP system, will continue to take cash at the fare box.
So more
Yes. The only with last July, that with the fare changes, whether you're a cash rider or a smart trip card rider on a bus, you're paying $1.75. The difference is, if you have a smart trip card, you're eligible for free transfer. If you pay cash, you're not. Free transfer to another bus, or a discount if you go to Metro Rail.
So you have things to ask us or tell us that you haven't shared yet.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. First and foremost, if you have paper fare cards still in your junk drawers or elsewhere, Metro checks, start trading them in. So this will give you more than a year's warning. Tell your friends, trade them in to add value to their smart trip cards. Basically, get rid of them. If you haven't already, please register your smart trip cards. Share that with your friend. We emphasize this even with the station managers, as if they're helping a customer purchase a card, to ask them, please register your cards, because that's the, you know, gives you balance protection if you lose it, and allows you to talk to customer service about your account. If you haven't done it already and you're a regular rider, consider the auto reload program. So that's where you can basically set it and forget it. You go to WMATA.com and you can set it up so that it's, if your card value drops below $10, then we will automatically charge your credit card and add more money to your card. Or if your pass, if you use a pass, your pass is about to expire, same thing. We can know that your pass is about to expire. We can automatically do that. That way you do not have to wait in line or deal with the vending machines or the white toggle switches or anything. You can just, and more importantly, or as importantly, you'll never get caught short and have to use the exit fare machines, which only take cash, on your way out. And most of us usually are in a hurry to get home. And so auto reload is a good way to go. And if you don't like that, then we also have the auto load where you can go online and just do it one at a time if you prefer that. So tell your friends, auto reload via WMATA.com, trade in, register your cards, and trade in your fare cards sooner rather than later. That's my advice. Other than that, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for coming. I'm going to trust that part of your communication plan is to tell that to the media so that gets out to the world.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. We will definitely be.
We won't hit quite as many people.
To broadcast this. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you very much for
coming.
Thank you.
We appreciate
it.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Now back to the agenda and try to remember everything I skipped over. Before we go any further, I want to do the roll call to order. So first I'd like the two new members to tell us just a little bit, give us, you know, the one-minute story or two-minute story of yourself about who you are, where you represent, how you use Metro today, and maybe some reason that you're here. So Teresa, why don't you go first?
Hi, my name is Teresa Wells, and I represent Prince George's County. I ride the bus and the Metro Rail going home from work, and occasionally in the mornings. But I saw the sign on one of the Metro buses, and I thought it was a interesting organization and a liaison to the board of directors, and the opportunity to express concerns and hear what the community has to say. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Sherry. Hi, Sherry Doster, also from Southern Prince George's County, very close to Fort Washington area by the harbor area and things like that. And we hardly ever see notices as to what's gonna go on and happen with WMATA itself. So when I saw the same bus advertisement, I just jumped on it. I said, oh, great. Sometimes, you know, it's just great to find out things as they're happening or before they're happening as opposed to after it's already done. And that way it became an opportunity to perhaps get involved and be that linkage and, you know, just a liaison to what's going on in our community and on that end of the world that seems to be left out. So. I was very interested in it, and I just thought I would contribute that way. People, you know, will talk about it, but it's hard to give up your time sometimes. But I'm at a place now where I can. So my ridership is probably only 3 times a week now. So it worked out much better since I'm homebound for the next year or so. So it gives me a chance to meet new people.
Well, welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Now
we're all going to take a turn. We're not going to quite do the, you know, the whole spiel, but if we can each just please give our first name, because, you know, you've got a name tag in front, and what area you represent, and if any of you, this is optional, so inclined, you know, one piece of a tip or something you think might be of interest to them about your experience here or yourself or whatever. So we're going to start with you, Stephanie.
I'm Stephanie. I represent D.C. I don't have a car, so I take rail and bus everywhere. I've only been on this committee for a little while, for a few months, but I think what we all know is that change takes time.
Well, we'll, as I said earlier, from Prince George's County, also from the north end of the county. I would say that being here, I have seen progress, and just recently, this is, of course, just before you two got here, we had a major breakthrough for some of the recipients of the Blue Line, and then we got a chance to actually stand in on the new silver trains that are coming up, the 7,000 series that's coming up, and so, which are very nice. So the Blue Line is the recipient of that first because, as people do say, the squeaky wheel gets oiled first, and that is just exactly what happened. And as many people that complain, they never come to the source. And as you can see, you know, we don't have anybody here tonight complaining or, you know, making comments. But each meeting that we have, you know, sometimes we have people, sometimes we don't. But yes, by all means, tell people.
Good evening. I'm Jeremiah Bush. I represent Fairfax County. I've been on the board for several months as well. Also on the Budget and Finance Committee, I'm the chair of that committee. So we do need new members because the two prior members were both on that board. So I'm a little short staffed too. So if you're interested, just, you know, we'll talk about it later. All right.
I'm Mary Ann Zimmerman in Montgomery County, Silver Spring, downtown. And so have bits and pieces with Prince George's since we share a border and a lot of buses and other things. I'm primarily Red Line user, somewhat 16th Street bus, retired at this point, so don't use it as often as I used to. The participation, listening to what neighbors are seeing, what those are that are on the bus or Metro with you is a great source of input, and it does need to be shared. Welcome.
Hello, I'm Pablo. I represent DC. I use pretty much any transportation method available in DC, but sidecar, I think, is the only one I have to try yet. Change takes time. That's a good one. Where you see time moving a bit faster, maybe it's on some of the committees. That was my experience. You see a bit of a, how can I say? It feels a bit more practical sometimes. So try that. See if that works for you. I mean, I hope it's going to work for me. Welcome.
I am Bob, and I live in Montgomery County. I've been on the committee for about a year. I've ridden the Red Line probably for 35 years. When I started riding it, it ended in DuPont Circle. That was the last stop. Makes me feel like I'm doing this too long. And currently I'm training my son, who has his first professional job and just got a job downtown, how to ride the subway. His third day on the job.
Teach him about lowering the number.
Yeah. His third day on the job, he called me and said, "Dad, I'm at, you know, wherever he was, Tenley Town or something." Like, he says, "We've the previous three stations, we stopped for 15 minutes each. I'm going to be late for work the third day of my job." The good news is when he got to work, he discovered his boss also rides the Red Line.
And I'm Barbara. I represent Alexandria, and I'm the chair, as you know. I had some advice. I've forgotten it. Oh, yeah, I'm one of those apparently whiny Blue Line riders who did not get it just because we are whiny. It had to do with the fact that we do have the most crowded. You missed the presentation, I think, of another presentation. They're still the crowdest. Yeah, they were here. Okay, that's enough for me.
I'm from Fairfax, Virginia. Ride the Orange Line, and I ride buses, and I walk, and occasionally drive. But my wife doesn't like me to drive. So. But mostly, I ride the Metro. So, and I've been 2.5 years So listening to everyone, there's seems like 2.5 years is starting to be a long time
senior,
here.
Yes.
Senior.
Patrick.
Thank you. My name is Pat Sheehan. I am the chair of a, I guess, a sister committee at Accessibility Advisory Committee, which deals with disability issues, particularly seniors and people with disabilities, for bus, rail, and metro access. So the focus that I bring to this committee is to discuss what's going on with my committee, make sure the disability issues are you know, at least advised here. What I find is that the RAC and AAC, working on similar issues going before the board of directors, are a very effective group, particularly when we're giving joint presentations saying the same things before the board. So it's interesting. The RAC has been an interesting group to work with. I've actually been on the RAC for 15 years since it started with my position as AAC. And I've seen it grow and develop and mature. And I like the relationship between the RAC and AAC. I think we're an effective group.
Deb McKenzie, and I've been on for about 9 months. I'm a member at large, but I live in Arlington, Virginia.
Do we have any corrections from the membership? Hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Fred has moved. Second?
Second.
I saw your hand first, Mary Ann. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Abstention? Got it. Okay. You two could abstain if you wanted to, because you don't really know. Okay, one abstention. Thank you. We need to talk about our future meetings. This is not usually on our agenda. James, were you going to, do you have some calendars to put up in front of us? Couple things. Coming up, I think at the start of the year, the leadership team looked at the calendar and we thought that there were no meetings that needed to be rescheduled because of the way holidays felt. But I wanted to bring up as a reminder then that our next meeting is July 1st, which is a Wednesday. And it's my understanding that because 4th of July is a Saturday, that the most common, I mean, I think that recognized holiday will be Friday the 3rd. Correct? Okay. So I just want to make sure, I'm hoping that we will have a quorum in attendance. Are there any people, I mean, is there anyone who's concerned about that? I'm not asking each of you to confess, well, I'm not going to be here, but if I really thought a lot of you weren't going to be. We're okay? As far as you know? Okay. So we are having that meeting on Wednesday, July 1st. The next thing that comes up is that this room is going to be renovated. Are we going to have cushy chairs, or can you tell us to inspire us what we're going to get? Oh, James. Okay. Make it up. Yeah. Make a commitment you can't keep.
Most of the improvements are going to be around the communication. So
okay.
Microphone system, the speaker system,
great.
You get a lot of the feedback quite a bit. The board chairs that are in that room are almost original, so they're going to be replaced.
Oh, okay.
These are actually fairly recent.
Okay.
These are fairly recent. So.
Yeah, but this room itself is being renovated, correct? Something's happening
this
to
room
it.
And the board room.
And
yes.
The board room.
So
there'll
be
okay.
A lot of technology improvements, better
right.
Screens, better lighting, that sort of thing, and some fire life safety improvements.
So what you see on the calendar in front is that starting on the 24th of July, we have renovations
in these two rooms. And if you go into August, it's the entire month, and it ends somewhere in September. Is that right, if you want to show September? Okay, so we're dealing with a challenge. And one of the questions that came up, if you want to go back to August, the board itself traditionally does not meet in August. I know that the RAC in the, just the, I guess it's 3 years now that I've been here. I guess I've only been here for what, then 2 Augusts? I'm not sure. Anyway, we have met because we're typically working on things, and whether the board is meeting or not is not necessarily going to mean we can or can't do things. But I think, James, did I hear you right, that you are having the difficulty finding an alternate space for us for both August and September? So are you two, James and Jennifer, are you of the opinion that even if we found a space to meet, we couldn't meet our obligation to have it be public and out over the air? Is that something that can be, it's not something we can skip for a month? We can just have a meeting and not have it be publicized? Probably not, but what do you think? Okay. So is there a room that you can find for us for both August and September for the full rack? Or do you?
That is something that we're still using.
Okay.
But the real question that I posed to the council was surrounding August, because the board of directors normally vacations during that month if the RAC wanted to explore that same option.
Yeah.
We typically left that up to
RAC. And we, last year, it was actually even the chair that brought it up and suggested it. And as a group at that time, the group decided, no, we needed the time to get some things done. And we aren't preparing things specifically to go to the board every month. But I don't want to be the dictator on this. I'd like it to be something that we agree on. I'm opening that to discussion. Who would like to make a comment? Anybody?
I can.
Patrick.
Yeah, I'll just say that on the AAC side, we have decided, well, I think we're going to decide not to meet. We don't have access to this room. We won't have access to the boardroom. And from what I understand, the training room does not have sufficient audio in there to be able to provide for, if you've got folks that need the hearing,
yeah,
the assistance with hearing aids and all. So I think just from a technical presentations side, I just don't see how RAC can, where would you meet that would be open?
But one of the issues is it would be for 2 months, is that correct?
I guess the question would be,
can you show September again?
Yeah, September the 9th, isn't this when it's going to be open? So if you took another Wednesday, you could make it the 9th or the 16th. I think where AEC is looking at doing it, maybe I didn't realize it was going to be the 9th when it was open.
Well, the renovations would not be over until they would continue through the 9th.
Through the 9th, okay.
Well, yeah. And I, knowing what renovations, I don't know that anybody can sign in blood that it's going to be ready on the 10th. I mean, that's my experience on renovations.
They scheduled that because the board of directors is scheduled to meet on the 10th.
Oh. Oh, because it's the second Thursday,
yes.
Yeah.
But if you would like to explore reserving this room for a date other than the 2nd of September, we can do that.
The 16th.
Okay. But that means still having like a 6-week period where we wouldn't have a meeting if we didn't meet in August. Okay. I'm not asking for a binding vote. I would just like to have a show of hands of who would like to hold
a full RAC meeting in August. You don't have to. I think it's anonymous. Nobody's for that. Who does not? I just want to make sure we have people raising their hands for something. Are who is in favor of not meeting in August? Okay. Well. Oh. Okay.
In August.
August.
Wait a minute. What's the, what are you asking?
Well, August. August is renovation the entire month. Who would like to have August off? Okay, so since it might not have been clear, and then who would like to meet in August? And I think we have three. Okay, so we had more people that wanted off.
Question. I'm sorry.
Yes.
But are we saying that the board as well as the the AAC are also they're not convening for August?
Right.
So we won't have. I guess those updates or the feedbacks anyway for that,
there's
but
no place to meet
I know, I mean, there will be other ridership issues and things that will still.
Well, yeah, the board is typically not in this meeting, and we do not typically on any given month give them any, other than I speak at the board meeting and kind of tell them what we were doing for the month, but it's not a, to me, there's not a direct impact, I don't think, but it's something they do, and I would guess that because they don't have meetings, that means there are no committee meetings, and that means that's probably when everybody on the staff takes vacations because it's the one month they don't have to work around those schedules. So, I mean, maybe we'd have trouble getting a staff to speak, you know, maybe. I don't know. But it's – yes, Marianne.
The issue is if the meeting can be open, the issue is do we have an agenda that requires us to be here. If there's no work, we shouldn't meet.
Well,
if we have work, we should. It's, I don't like to come to meetings, but I think
there's always work, though.
There's always work.
There's always work.
I think
but
we
I
don't
think,
typically plan it that yeah. far out. Well, it is only two months. But we, you know, maybe the right thing to do would have been to put this after we have all of our committee reports, because because we have 13 initiatives that we said we wanted to work on this year, and we want to, you know, make proposals or recommendations on some of them, probably a lot of those during this year, and we're trying to work on those in committees and then bring them into the full RAC to discuss, you know, that work can continue. I probably should say that we do use this room as well for committee meetings, but we probably have other options available. If the training room may be booked, but for some of those times, but we probably have other options. Committees are not big groups. We can find alternate arrangements. We just couldn't be open to the public. Yes, it is. We've been meeting here because it's public. But if we announce to the public that we're meeting at an alternate location. They are public meetings. We just don't get very many. The customer committee has had one member of the public come a couple times. But it's not common.
So,
sure.
Can I relay what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
As far as the RAC meeting for August, you put that to a vote and have the RAC members decided that they would like to hold that meeting, that they would not hold that meeting at all.
Well, I was just asking for kind of like a getting a feel for it. Yeah, and the feel is that there were more people that would rather not than me. But I think what I would like to do is maybe vote on that when we finish the committee reports, just to see where we are and how we feel about things. And you have, yes, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Did you want to discuss the other scheduling issues?
With the, you mean the committees?
Yes.
Well, and that was what I was just starting to talk about, in that I think that James and I talked a little bit about it. If we wanted to continue to have the committee meetings because there's some things you're working on and you don't want to let it lapse for a long time, we can make arrangements. Like, for instance, some of us used to meet at a Panera that's a couple blocks, few blocks from here, and if we just would have to announce to the public that that's what we're doing. And if we have no more than what we have when we come here, I think we'll be fine. And a teleconference is also an option for the committee meetings. I don't know that that's an option Is that, I don't know if that's a, is that a realistic option for the entire rack?
Telephone?
Yeah, not an option. It doesn't fit with what, okay, so the committees can, but not the full rack, because it's mandate. Okay, thank you for the clarification. Okay, so so the option for September is possible. We could delay. I do know that when we've tried to reschedule, if we move it a week, sometimes it works out. If we move it a couple, it's hard to say. But I'm gonna table this. Let you guys kind of think about it as we go through the next part of the agenda, and then we'll come back to that and talk about it. Because then you two will also have a feel for the committees and what they're doing. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
I'm new. You said sure. The reports, and that you have to finish the reports. What type of reports, and then when do you complete them?
Well, I'm not sure which. If you're talking tonight, we're going to just talk about the progress for each of the committees far, and the end product for many of the committee initiatives will be that we'll submit some sort of resolution or some proposal or recommendation to the board, and possibly and often to the staff. The staff that handles that topic, like if it was a bus thing, we'd give it to the bus people too. By the time we finish our work on that.
Okay. And regarding the meeting for August, by July, would there be like a room arranged if we were to decide to have the meeting for August? Since it's
he
still
would keep trying, but he hasn't had luck yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So you may have logistics on your side. Any other questions? We'll come back to that then. Committee reports. The chair, my report to the board is already in your packet, I believe. It always is, and I think it is tonight. I'm going to move the report I usually give from the May committee meetings to the end to make sure we have time for all the committees. And if needed, I'll send it out by email. So that means, surprise, surprise, budget and finance is first. And so, Jeremiah, you are, as the chair of the budget, would you like to give the full rack your progress report for where you are?
Yes. So we've met with Mark, and I've communicated with one of the other members to regard the where Metro stands as far as their fare simplification. So I kind of want to get an idea. One is how much research and work the WMATA has done into fare simplification, and two, what is essentially on the table, if you will. So, in other words, so we wouldn't have to we wouldn't step on their toes or have to do some unnecessarily duplicate work. So, essentially, I'll hand out what I'm passing out now is kind of a summary of what what we're looking at as far as I guess you could say this is the report outline. So essentially, there is research, and Metro has been looking at this for quite a number of years now. I believe it's been 4 years. And so you would see that there's a total of six concepts that Metro has studied or looked at as far as fare restructuring or fare simplification. And I'll just briefly go through them real quick. So the first option, the higher fare on premium buses. So this is the Metro Express. So this is essentially a shortened or a bus route that has less stops. The pros on that, of course, it's actually pretty favorable for riders from based on their surveys. Riders are open to paying more on a Metro Express in order to have a faster trip. Plans on reducing crowding on standard routes. And of course, because of the higher fare, it also increases revenue. The downside to the higher fare option is that it's counterproductive to fare simplification. It actually increases fare complexity as opposed to reducing it. So number two was the integrated transfer system. So this is, again, to continue to enhance what the current transfer options that are available. And of course, the pros is improved customer convenience, and it promotes intermodal travel. However, the downside of that would be a fare increase will be required in order to offset the loss of revenue. Now the third through sixth options, those are all conceptual ideas. They have not been formally proposed by Metro to the board. But the integrated monthly passes, essentially that would be allowing somebody to purchase a pass of, I believe it was 40 times the rate of what their smart benefit was, and essentially that was basically unlimited ridership throughout the entire month. And of course, the improved customer convenience encourages off-peak travel, high level of customer interest. The cons that they studied was unpredictable revenue forecasting, likely revenue loss, but it increases guaranteed revenue. And the downside is, again, this concept has not really been well studied or researched either by Metro. The fourth option would be eliminating the peak off-peak rail surcharge. Of course, the pros is the peak off-peak surcharge is very highly unpopular among the riders. So eliminating that would be a customer service win for Metro. It's also, it simplifies the fares by just, you know, having a destination route, if you will, instead of just worrying about the time of day or the day of the week that you're riding on. So it does reduce fares. Again, however, the con is reduction in revenue. Fifth option, zone-based rail fares. It's a simpler fare structure for riders. It's lower development costs for electronic fare systems, and that's the NEP that that our speaker talked about earlier, the new electronic payment processing systems. The cons, though, is the social equity concerns around zone-based fares, as well as jurisdictional pushback. That would be, of course, the full board would have to vote, and any zone-based fares will likely get some significant opposition from Maryland as well as Virginia. And again, the sixth and the most simplest of all fare simplifications would be a flat rail fare. So it'll be essentially reducing the number of fare types from 44,376 down to four types of fares. Obviously, the pros, it's the simplest form of fare, easy to understand, it's predictable, you could calculate the cost easily, and it allows for quicker deployment and lower costs in deployment and implementation of new technology systems. However, the cons are it's very unpopular for long commuter riders, such as myself or Fred, or maybe somebody who is commuting from somewhere like Vienna or Dunloring.
I'm sorry, why would it be unpopular? For a long commute, wouldn't it be unpopular for
The zone fares is what's unpopular for the longer commuters.
Okay.
The flat fares is what's unpopular for the short route commuters. Yeah,
they're subsidizing the long route.
Exactly.
They're traveling a fourth as far and they pay the same.
Right. Exactly. And so the jurisdiction most likely to oppose the flat rail fare would be DC.
The zone-based fares, isn't that like a simplification of what currently is in the system, which is roughly based on distance?
Well, it's destination-based. This would be zone-based fares would be, it's essentially reducing the number of combinations. So I think there's 44,000, right? That's what they said.
Right.
You would essentially have maybe, four to six zones. So, traveling between the way that he brought it up would be like, let's say, for instance, downtown D.C., anywhere within D.C., the city would be one zone, if you will. So it's just one price. So, and then as you go out further or go to high commuter stops like Wheelie or Vienna, then that would be in a separate zone.
Travel within a zone has a fixed price.
Exactly.
Depending on how many zones you cross, you pay more.
Right. Or depending on what zone you go to, right? So the combinations, it wouldn't be reduced all the way down to four. It would be, it depends on the number of zones they establish, but you can theoretically get the number of fare combinations to anywhere between four to whatever, 20 or so.
What do you think, I cannot understand why we have these cones here, social acuity constant and the jurisdictional pushback on those. Are we simplifying? It's still kind of distance-based, isn't it?
Well, no, because with the zone-based fares, the riders that are still most likely to pay higher costs, because again, the idea of talking to Mark Schofield from finance is any of these proposals have to be essentially revenue neutral,
right,
in order for the board to adopt it. Mm-hmm. So that means however they structure the zones, or even if they go to a flat fare, somebody's going to end up having to cover more of the cost, whether it's an increased subsidy from the jurisdiction or whether certain zones, like let's say somebody commuting from Vienna into a zone in downtown D.C., which is a large majority of the commuters on the Orange Line during the weekday, is those would probably be picking up a higher cost than even what they're paying now.
Yeah, the sense likely is going to make it pricier for users. Some users will pay maybe the same as they pay now.
Right. However, right, if you're, and like me, I mean, I'm kind of neutral on this. I use Mesia as an example just from my career, is I commute from Vienna, mm-hmm, to D.C., so I would probably likely, based on a zone pricing, pay a higher cost. However, I also travel a lot within D.C. itself while I'm at work. So I would, in effect, benefit from a lower cost from having a zone pricing because it may more or less offset depending on how they conceptualize the zones. But
I think that the biggest danger is that everybody will be will be upset. I don't know about much, but
I'd like to interrupt just for, excuse me, but I need to interrupt, I think. I think this, you've been working on this with either a very small group, or who all has been participating in this work on this?
I've been the only one.
You've been the only one, okay.
Yeah.
And we need to change that. We need to,
yep,
get you some people to do this with.
Right.
Our purpose tonight is really to understand where you are. And so what,
okay,
so in other words, you have, and I think this is good to have and to give it to people, but as far as, I don't think we want to debate what we think of these ideas,
right, yeah,
here. So it's more you've gotten involved with finance, you've gotten Mark to explain to you what they've thought about,
yeah,
and so what else? Is there other activity that you can describe, and then what's next on your project list?
Well, what's next is essentially, maybe that's, like I said, that also is essentially serves as my report outline as well. So essentially the options on the table, and what we basically have is an understanding of where WMATA is as far as their progress into fare simplification and where they stand, as well as what their expectations are.
Right.
And again, one of their biggest expectations is, any of these proposals, anything, whatever happens, has to be revenue neutral, as well as concerns regarding, social equity. That has actually been a major focal point of the WMATA board. Is the WMATA board has historically favored equity over simplicity. So any of that we must keep in mind if we're going to recommend or review any fare simplification options is what the board is most likely to favor.
Okay. I didn't even actually know that they'd done this much.
I think one comment though, so.
Only with the red light on.
Okay, so my only comment is, it's okay. Reports should not start with, okay, here's what the board is going to agree with, and we'll write a report to what they agree with. We are supposed to, take our knowledge of the system and gather information and tell them, hey, here's a way you could change to make it better. And starting with the assumption that the staff says you can only do these three things, I don't think is the right starting place. I don't think there's anything wrong with sending something up there and they say, no, we don't like it.
Well, but if we know what's the point of spending time on something that you know is actually not going to go anywhere anyway? I mean, that's...
So you have to
have some type of parameters to go
by. I guess I'm opposed to eliminating all options because the staff said the board isn't going to like it.
I think the... Okay, I do think we need to.
So we can move on.
We'll move on. One of the things probably have to consider the social equity. There are laws that guide that. It is not just a board preference.
Right.
There's no law about whether it be simple or complicated, but there are laws about.
Yeah.
Is it the Title VI? Yeah. Thank you. So you've gotten this input, and are you ready to? What is your next step? Is to try to see what.
Well, next step is to really look at the different restructuring options that are out there, and again, probably formulate just debate and decide on which one would be the either most practical or most beneficial to the ridership, and then present that to the board.
Okay.
Could I make a suggestion?
Yes, Patrick.
Yeah. One of the areas that we're involved with on the AAC also is Fair Policy Working Group. So I think that going through, I'd be very interested in what you're going to share with the board, because we are doing this, we're going to start doing the same thing. And I think generally, I forget what the timetable is, but I think you need to have a plan going forward somewhere between October and November for January.
Mark had told me that because they start working on the budget much even before that they really needed something this summer.
I talked to him, yeah.
This summer? October. Okay.
He did?
Yeah.
He did say.
He said September is when they, start working on
okay.
the proposals.
Okay, but we have to have gotten, right, okay.
Yeah, September,
We don't have until October or so. They start working.
Yeah.
We have to get to them before they start doing what they're going to do.
Now, I will say, based on where we have been and what we've looked at, and the six areas that you presented, it's pretty comprehensive. There's a few of them that just through discussions with Carol Kissel and the previous CFOs never went anywhere. So I still think it's good to present them, but the history has been that when we brought them up before the board, particularly the zones and the fixed fare, which would be wonderful for a metro access, never flew. Because the numbers just didn't add up. So good ideas, and we can discuss them. I don't have a problem with that. But the history of both the zones and the fixed fare is it didn't fly.
Yeah, and that's kind of where, talking to Mark
right.
is where,
yep.
We have to look at an alternate approach. If every proposal that's been submitted before it just keeps getting shot down, well, we kind of have to take another look and see what our approach is going to be in order to try to make it at least have a better shot at having the board really consider it.
So AAC would be very interested in listening to what you have to say.
What I'd like to do, I would like to see if we can take some volunteers from this group and to work with you on what's next and to see if there are some things that we can get behind as a group. Are we able to inspire Patrick to be one of those people, you think, to work with Jeremiah on the RACs? Consideration of fair simplification because you've got some knowledge
from the AAC.
Yeah.
I think I can, yes. I also think I've got some people on my committee that would
great.
Be able to work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyone else willing to add to the work that Jeremiah, I think you officially have some other team members. I don't offhand know who they are, but I know, like you said, two of them were the people that left. I'm sure that I didn't mean that as a, you should take that personally. That's why they left. It's not what I was saying. Is there anyone here that is willing to work with him? Okay, Stephanie, great. And depending on how we do it, and I actually would be happy to join that group. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Do you want to just take a second I think people may know that you did also work already this year on the response to the fair proposals for the new budget year. And
yeah, correct. So I wasn't in attendance the last meeting. So yeah, I did attend the board meeting and public hearing and vote on the budget. And there was some The concerns from a ridership standpoint was mostly revolving around the elimination of the, can't remember the name of the card at that point.
Can I interrupt? Did I hear at the last board meeting that that was reversed eventually? Do you know, Jennifer? I thought I heard that. Was it TLC or something?
TLC, that's it, yeah.
Yes, they are, they're not going to eliminate the product. They're going to eliminate the paper delivery of the product. So they're going to be working with the other vendors and contractors that are involved in the TLC to, I think, work through maybe a sticker type of system. But the paper fare card is still going away.
Okay.
The past product is not.
Good, yeah. And that was actually one of the ideas that was brought up by one of the writers at the meeting. The concern was it's going to actually reduce, the elimination of TLC may actually reduce ridership because of a lot of the commuters from Frederick, Maryland, and et cetera. And so one of the proposals was to have a sticker that you would purchase every month that you can put on the card that actually continue to use it. So I'm actually glad to hear that they were able to work that out and resolve it.
I meant to tell you that, yeah. So everyone that's already been in the group for a while knows that he did bring some information to an earlier meeting. That was, I consider that the one initiative that was completed about it. And our feedback was really quite similar to a lot of the other feedback, and the jurisdictions and the board were really chose not to make the changes that were on the table just as options, that it was definitely not the right time because this was coming to the public shortly after January's incident and that. But there were a lot of reasons they didn't support the fare changes that we had looked at and that your group had carefully looked at. So thank you, Jeremiah. I appreciate it. So let's see. Oh, yes, I closed up my... Bob thinks he's next, so I guess I'll let him take it. Yes, the Customer Service Committee.
Thank you. We have four items in our work plan. Let me try to go through them as quickly as I can. The first one is collaborate with WMATA staff on safety-related procedures and timely and clear communications between Metro and the riders. This is basically communications. And it's a tough issue to get our arms around because I think it's involves a minimum of four elements. It's communicating with riders prior to them getting to the Metro station. It's communicating with riders before they enter the Metro station. It's communicating with riders when they're at the platform, and then communicating with riders when they're on the train. Hopefully not often enough when they have the incidents. And it's all the four or five different procedures and outlooks. And we want to try to make some recommendations that will have at least a minimal impact. And these are profound issues, particularly the issue of how do you communicate with riders when there's an incident. And we know that Metro has developed a video for riders. It's online. We've seen it. I'm not in a position to suggest whether it goes far enough or is effective or will help in an incident. But there's the ongoing issue of are riders getting adequate communication? And when they get the communication, can they understand it? I mean, we're dealing with some pretty outmoded communication equipment within the Metro system. Depending on what kind of train you're on, what kind of car you're in, you get clearer or less clear communication. It's a pretty disjointed, that's my term, just disjointed system. But I hope as we talk about it some more in the committee, we can come up with some recommendations or suggestions that will help improve the system. The second item is the whole issue of the Silver Line and the Blue Line service, and I think we talked about that. We already heard enough about that today. I mean, my only comment would be that we really do need the Metro staff to communicate with us on what's happening. If you're planning on making a change and you're recommending it to the board, I think that we ought to hear it first. We ought to not hear it after the recommendation is implemented, or, you know, or and we want, you know, we're here to give the board our feedback. And if there's some suggestions on how to improve this, we ought to hear it first and then give our recommendations to the board so they can at least have that under advisement when they make the final decision on yay or nay or make revisions. The third item is the whole issue of rail station operational roles, and that's got a reasonable amount of discussion in the committee. And I am prepared to draft a letter to the board on three items that we've talked about, and I hope there was a consensus on the customer service committee. One is to recommend that there be improved monitoring of station managers. Station managers are supposed to be out of their kiosks all the time at rush hour. And we want. I think most of us have had our anecdotal experiences that is not the case. Just tonight, the station manager where I got on was standing outside of the station reading when I got on the Metro. You know, what the hell. the second suggestion would be some sort of uniform. The station managers wear some sort of uniform to identify themselves as station managers. I mean, you know, if you found five employees of Metro at a station, you would have a hard time differentiating who the station manager is.
Bob, I don't mean to interrupt,
sure.
But to your comment about station manager uniforms, that's actually part of the current customer care program. So I think they're set to be in stations come this fall, I believe. So just to let you know that I think we've heard that comment before.
I've heard that rumor,
yes.
But I've also talked to some people on the board who have some of the same questions I have.
No, I'm just letting
you
know that the plan is to have them in different uniforms in the fall.
Yeah, good. That would be great. We'll take credit for it if it happens.
Yeah.
And the third item is station operations is the issue of when the station manager needs assistance, because there's something going on, some sort of incident or problem, at least as has been explained to us, there is support, but the support has to come via the Metro line, the Metro rail line. And that just seemed to us to be a little problematic, because if there was a problem on the rail line, there's going to be a problem getting somebody to the station to help. So we have a couple of suggestions in that area. So I'm going to just draft it, and I'll try to circulate it to everybody.
The committee,
and see if we can get it prepared for the July meeting. Signed off. The last item is provide recommendations for additional information available to riders at bus stops. I don't know about the other members of the committee. I'm still having some problems getting my arms around it. There are some bus stops that apparently have electronic information available. I have no idea to what extent.
We haven't really put in any time on
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
so
right.
Really that
that.
Our status,
yeah,
but
yeah.
We aren't really. We've
tackled the other. Yeah, and absolutely. I did neglect one thing, under the first one in terms of communication. Last year we had a. This is just my thoughts. Last year we had a presentation on signage, within the system. We had a gentleman here who was talking about how they were going to, the plans to revise some of the signage. There was some concern about the direction in which this department was heading on that. We've been told informally that they're not working on signage anymore. I just want to sort of preempt it and send a letter to the board saying, could we, you know, make sure that before any further action is taken on signage, that we are consulted. I know there was a
fact, there was an article, I think this week in the paper or last week in the paper, about metro signage, people's concerns about that. So anyway, those are that's sort of where we're at. We'll try to make some more progress on a few of these things and try to come up with something that, you know, maybe has some impact. Thanks.
No, I didn't hear back, Dan. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting. You keep taking my mic.
I have stuff.
Oh, you do? Okay, fine. Okay, so Dan couldn't be here tonight, and so he has secured Mary Ann to give the update.
We have six areas in our programs, projects, and planning committee. So two to each name, I guess. So I can give you a brief status on each. First is collaborate with AAC on recommendations for priority seating. We had one joint meeting a couple of months ago, and we are trying to get another meeting scheduled. The last attempt conflicted with getting some staff in on another subject we're looking at, so that hasn't been done yet. But we see value in working with AAC with our similar but not totally the same approaches in who we're serving. That a joint effort should have more benefit. The second is research WMATA's approach to mobile application technology and provide recommendations as appropriate. Two members have presented to our committee a draft resolution regarding mobile applications, and the committee is providing comments back to them. What we plan to do is to have what we consider a final draft sent ahead of the next meeting for discussion and seeking approval of the RAC, which would be in July. Third is investigate possibilities to better elicit feedback from a wider group of riders through internet technology. One of the committee members, I'm the one that is used as the example about who's using what technology. And so, and we have a kid about, will I ever use Twitter? And I told them not to hold their breath, and we get along well. We kid about it. But one of the committee members, and actually several of them, have some very good ideas around using technology and use technology a lot and fairly practical is degrading what they actually have to say. And so one of them has sent out something to our committee of here are some ways to strategize and approach it. We're providing some feedback. Our next committee meeting, which would mean July, we're going to talk about it or hope to more fully and move forward so that in a couple of months I would assume we would have something to bring here. Obtain payment pilot feedback and provide recommendations as appropriate. At our last meeting, and this is why we couldn't meet with the AAC, we had a very good discussion with Tom Randall, who is the WMATA staff person, dealing with a payment pilot program. And we learned a lot, and as was said before, it was sort of a proof of concept as opposed to a larger kind of pilot as they had initially intended. At this point, we aren't looking any further into this. If there's anything more that comes, we'll look back at it, but right now we're sort of letting that one go. Fifth is research current status of cell phone service, plans for future, and provide recommendations as appropriate. We've just brainstormed. We haven't done anything on that yet. And then the last is research WMATA's operational coordination with regional transit systems in the context of service cuts and provide recommendations as appropriate. And again, we've only brainstormed. We haven't begun to move forward because of the things at the front that we'd like to get to some decision on and something to you.
And I think some of the impetus on that was that one of the options when the budget was being worked on a few months ago was looking at possibly trading out some of the service in outlying areas to different community partners.
It is all of that. And
yeah.
Given that, you know, like...
And that was pulled out of the... Yeah.
Right, but that was not the only thing. The other partners, all three jurisdictions have money problems, and there are very major decisions being made around both the big and small pieces of it. And so the question sort of is, how almost at a working level, when you get past the strategic decisions, how do you make sure that those groups that are working on the pieces don't do things that work past each other? So that's to come in the future.
Thank you, Marianne. I appreciate it. The Leadership and Governance Committee is synonymous with the chair, me, and the three vice chairs. And we do meet once a month, just as all the other committees. We had just two things that we put on. I probably put them on for the year. One was to identify and implement processes to improve our contribution to WMATA. So I saw, those of you that have been at our earlier meetings, or, you know, we're continually kind of looking for ways how we can contribute and sometimes feel that we're giving input maybe later than we should, not because we didn't know, but because we weren't asked. But just trying to find ways that we have a sense of that we are making a difference, that we're getting our message across to the board and to the staff who ask for our input, just to try to find ways to improve that. And one of the ways I've been trying to do that is interacting more with many of the people that come here to speak with us, that I can stay in touch with them because I see them at the various board meetings and committee meetings, but also just kind of bringing that up on a regular basis with the board. We meet with the board once a quarter, the executive committee of the WMATA board once a quarter, and trying to share what our thoughts and ideas are on that. On the refine the committee guidelines and expectations, that's simply that we, earlier in the year when we were forming the committee and we have so many new members, we have new members every year, is to say these are the things that we expect, this is how we'd like to have it. We'd like to have you have a note taker, to sort of publish notes and to report back, and that the rules about, all the rules that we set out in, I sent it out via email a couple of times, and then also it was in the packet here at a meeting, and I don't know if the committees have embraced them all, but I'll probably try to inspire embracing them more, too. I am going to skip any chair. I mean, I did attend the May committee meetings, both the second Thursday of the month and the fourth Thursday of month. I learned a lot of things, and I'd love to share them, but I don't want to do that if we still get out of here on time tonight. So I will send an email as a follow-up before I get more input from attending the June meetings. So I'd like to now go back to the discussion of July and August, because more of you now have visibility into what all the committees are doing, what kinds of things are doing, how far along they are, and I thought that would be a good ground level understanding in terms of deciding whether we want to meet in August or September. I am not trying to, arm wrestle people into thinking the way I think, but I wanted you to have that background information. So, all things considered, we have. Can you go back one more month to July again? July, it's only the last week of the month, so I don't think that interferes even with committees in July, correct? The committees are just a little earlier in the month. And to the two new members, please don't, if you have to leave or if you don't catch us after, we need to tell you more about the committees, what the choices are when they meet, that sort of thing. We can do that. So back to August. So we still have a quorum, I believe, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. We have one more than a quorum. Does anyone want to make a motion about August?
I move we don't meet on August 5th or in August at all.
Thank you for the clarification.
Second.
Discussion? Did we already have the discussion, I think? Okay.
I have one. We have, 12 people here? We have, 21 people? On
yes.
So we're missing 9 people.
Right.
My opinion is if we're going to have a quorum, if we have enough people who are willing to show up in August, it's a good reason to meet. We're not going to have a quorum anyway. We're not going to have a quorum. We can't transact any business.
that might be an argument not to be. So I'm suggesting that maybe we ought to just poll the membership.
All of us, or the ones that are present?
No, I'm thinking you ought to poll the membership of the committee and just say, are you going to be here with the meeting in August, whatever it is?
Okay.
Are you going to be here?
So we have a motion on the floor. And so this is where I start to get, you know, caught up in parliamentary procedure. We do have a motion on the floor, which is not what you just recommended,
no,
suggested.
No, I just, it's I'm not going to amend it. I'm not going to amend the motion.
That was discussion. That's an alternate.
Yeah.
That could be an alternate. Okay. Alternative. Yeah. Well, I think we had Teresa had you wanted to say something, so you need a mic there somewhere.
I have a question. Since in August you're doing renovation for the entire month, and technology will be enhanced communication, it's open to the public. Are the bylaws written as such that you have to have the public representation? So
we have months where the public doesn't show up. I mean, there's nobody from the public, but.
Okay, but suppose, say, you meet at, you know, recommended, like, a place, a food establishment, you had a meeting. Could you do that, or you must have public representation?
I think Jennifer said earlier that we need to have, I think you said the full rack needs to meet here. Or is it that we need to meet somewhere where we can have the electronic support? Are there alternate locations where we would have that we know of? Right. Is, but there hasn't probably been a renovation. I don't know. So.
But you, this also this technology here in this room supports listening devices for those folks,
right,
that are hearing impaired. You're not going to have that in a Panera or something like that.
No. Panera, I was suggesting only for a committee.
Yeah, and
yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just thinking like that. Any other area that you have,
yeah,
you've got to have that as an accommodation. Plus, I think someone can correct me, but you also have to have interpreters.
If we have a hearing impaired person present. Okay.
So I think that was my question.
Yeah, right.
To accommodate the purpose of the RAC, and considering,
okay,
that this is going to be taking place.
Right. So we have a motion on the floor. Is there any further discussion, or does somebody want to call for the question or call for the?
Let's make a comment that, you know, it seems that the logistical challenges behind trying to organize an August meeting just would be far more difficult than it is to just to say not have a meeting. But
yes.
That's,
well,
that's
I don't think you've given up, right? You said you hadn't found anything yet, but for the full RAC, August. Because I would think if that's the month that a lot of people take off, that there isn't a lot of competition for the remaining rooms. Okay. All right. So I don't think I can close the discussion. Doesn't somebody else have to? I can close the discussion. Pardon me? Okay. So it has been moved and seconded that the full RAC does not have a monthly meeting in the month of August, on August 5th or any other August date. All those in favor, please signify by raising your hand high enough that we can see it. You're not raising your hand, Will. I can't. Your hand's kind of up. No, I just don't. No, you weren't raising it. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I believe. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All those opposed, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Any abstentions? 3. Okay, good. It totaled up to 12. I just was concerned about that. All right. So the motion has passed that we will not meet in August as a full RAC. September.
Second.
Okay. Yeah.
The point there is too close to the next one. I understand. I'm just.
Okay.
Second to 16th.
Okay, so Fred has moved. Jeremiah seconded that our September full RAC meeting be on Wednesday, September 16th. Discussion? I don't think we'd make any assumption at all, would we? I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. But okay. Yeah. Okay. Any other discussion? So close the discussion and we'll take a vote on the motion. It has been moved and seconded that on in the month of September, we meet on Wednesday, September 16th for the full RAC. All in favor, please raise their hand high up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I believe. Did anybody else count? Well, we'll see if it totals up. All opposed. One opposed. Abstained. Two abstained. Okay, I think that was, that did total to 12, correct? Oh, abstained, Bob and Marianne. That did total, is that correct? Okay, fine. All right, so the motion is passed. It's September 16th. So the big action item is, James, you're going to, can you do some communication to all of us as soon as possible, because there are several of us missing. Those are the dates, to please reserve those. Somehow do a very creative thing that they don't have to open an attachment. They can see in big letters or something that these are date changes for our meetings. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm going to, clearly there may be reasons that committee members will want to meet at the times they've set aside or not. I'm going to leave that to each of the committees to determine and then communicate maybe with the committees. Is that okay? Is that a Jeremiah? Oh, Jeremiah, you're still, yeah. Yeah, right. I know. Marianne, do you believe that'll work for your group? You'll just either, you'll figure out your own schedule.
I think that's why you have to be here.
Yes, right. Well, because we do have, and then work with James. If, obviously, if we usually meet here and we can't, then, but there might be more options available for committee meetings here and then elsewhere. Okay. Okay, so, oh, 8:31. How did I do that? Okay, do we have any announcements that anyone is dying to make? Okay. You have to turn your mic on, though. So I don't do any better. Don't worry.
So I've been attending. I live out in Fairfax, and there is a large project being planned to fix I-66, which if you don't drive out there, you don't know about. But the I-66 is jammed all the time. And so I've attended several public meetings, and at every meeting, half the people want to know why we're not doing anything with Metro to fix it. And the answer is always Metro's not interested in fixing that problem out there, which would be to extend the Orange Line. And so I just thought I'd share that comes up. Literally half the people that get up to the microphone ask that question.
You know what? I think I've heard something about that, but I don't know enough. Do you know, you've got more history than anyone else here, I think, Jennifer. Do you want any history on that? Or any
is that
extension of the Orange Line? That's what you're talking
is
about.
That what you're more, is that your question?
It's not being done because it's not in the CLRP, and so it's not anything even planned to do. But I'm just saying that everybody that comes to the meeting asks why it's not being thought of.
Well, it's part of the strategic plan. I think one of the first priorities is to fix the core capacity issue, because if you start expanding lines and you don't have the core capacity, you can't bring more people into downtown. And that's really one of the focus areas. I'm not saying expansion is off the table, but I'm saying that floor capacity, I think, has to be dealt with first before you can really talk genuinely about expansion. That's just my personal take.
It's not in the momentum even, is it? I don't think.
Expansion
orange.
The orange line?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm, because I'm a former Orange Line rider that lived at the end of the Orange Line in Vienna, I know that there's just wide open spaces and everybody drives. So it's I understand. It's unfortunate. It is. It's a tremendous potential.
Once the waterfront, right, or is the new station, once they kind of shift that capacity from the Roslyn Tunnel, right, and they're going to shifting, is it the blue line or the yellow line, or one of them, the lines are shifting over, and then that may help increase some of the
I don't know,
or
don't
open
remember.
Up some of the ability in Roslyn, and then they can reconsider the expansion opportunities.
Okay. Any other announcements or any more discussion of that?
No,
okay. No, I appreciate your sharing that. I do. I really do, because I'm just so used to whining about blue that I forget about orange. Hearing none. Oh, Patrick, were you trying to?
No.
Oh, okay. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very, very much.